Man, it's so good to be home. So for those of you who don't know me, my name is Father Brent Derschmidt. I was just ordained last year on this day. So I'm super excited that... I'm super excited to celebrate my first anniversary as a priest with you guys. And what is actually really even more cool that I just realized, like, I don't know, a minute ago, is that the Mass that we're celebrating today, kind of, there's pieces of it, but basically the Mass that we're celebrating today was the first Mass that I celebrated here. So I celebrated the Mass of Jesus Christ the High Priest, but we actually use the same preface here and some of the same prayers even. So like, it's just wild how the Lord works. So I've been in formation to get ready to become a priest for 9 years now. And I was telling my parents on the way home from the airport, I got in last Friday. I was telling my parents on the way home, it's like, it's so wild to like not have to return to Rome. Like to not have to go through the major time change, to not have to go through the whole process of, you know, packing and unpacking and, you know, settling in only to like kind of uproot and move. And so it's just like, it's just so good to be home. One thing that I've learned throughout these 9 years of formation was something that one of my spiritual directors over my time really drilled into me over and over and over. And it's mostly because I needed to learn this lesson and still need to learn this lesson over and over and over. It's that the Lord will never be outdone in generosity. And I know that for those of you who have really tested that statement, that truth, you've probably recognized and encountered that it is a truth. The fact that, like, if I give my life totally over to the Lord in generosity, in that self-gift to the Lord, you will not be let down. This has been one of my biggest struggles to overcome, is that like I can be a very selfish person. And so it's like, and I'm sure probably there's some of you who are like, oh, but you you became a priest. It's like, trust me, like there's still a lot of selfishness that I'm working through. And I know that I'm not alone in that. And I bring this up because like this is basically the human condition, right? If I give of something to the Lord, he's going to let me down. That's the lie that we all have to battle with throughout our lives. It's the lie that goes all the way back to the Garden of Eden. The whole reason that Adam and Eve took fruit from the tree is because they're like, Lord, I don't trust that you are going to fulfill my needs, so I'm not going to be generous in giving myself to you. I'm going to close myself off to you. But through that, you know, in the sequence that we sing on the Easter Vigil, there's a line in it that says, "Oh, happy fault, the sin of Adam," right? So through this fault of Adam, the Lord reveals his generosity. Through our selfishness, the Lord proves his generosity over and over and over to draw us into being generous towards him, because the Lord will never be outdone in generosity. And so, if we really want to like kind of test this, we have to take risks, right? We have to like step out in faith and say, all right, Lord, I'm going to do this thing for you. I'm going to give of whatever it is that I'm struggling with, whether it's a fear that I'm up against, whether it's a desire that has kind of gone unfulfilled, whether it's a problem that I'm experiencing, you know, between my spouse and I, or with my kids, or at work, or interiorly with some form of addiction. It's that, Lord, I don't trust that I can give this over to you and that you'll work within it. So, Lord, I'm not going to be generous with that fear, with that problem, with that desire. I'm not going to be generous of that to you. I'm not going to be generous of my time to you. And so I'm going to be selfish in my time, and I'm going to compartmentalize my life. And maybe, you know, I'll come to Mass on Sunday, but like outside of that, my time is mine, right? And I'm not condemning you guys of that. I'm basically showing like, this is what I struggle with, and I have a feeling that I'm probably not alone in this. That I'm going to compartmentalize my life, and so I'm not going to give everything to the Lord. I'm going to give parts of my life to the Lord. And the Lord will be generous in that, but he wants to be far more generous. And this is what we see happening in the gospel today. So I want to walk through this almost line by line, because the depth of what's going on in this gospel is just so profound. What's actually kind of funny is that, like, okay, yes, we can see some very Eucharistic elements within this gospel, but if we're going to celebrate, like, the solemnity of the most holy body and blood of Christ, if we're going to celebrate the solemnity to worship the Lord in the Eucharist, to give thanks to the Lord in the Eucharist, to recognize the profound gift that the Eucharist is, I don't think I would have chosen this gospel. I mean, think of, like, there's at first glance, there's a lot of other gospels that the church could have chosen. Think of, like, the Last Supper, right? Think of, you know, the bread of life discourse in John 6, like, I am the bread of life. Whoever eats my flesh, drinks my blood, has life within you. If you don't eat my flesh, if you don't drink my blood, you have no life in you. Like, those would have been far better choices, it seems like, to choose to celebrate the solemnity of the Eucharist, the most holy body and blood of Christ. And yet the church chose this. And I want to see if we can draw why. Okay, so a little bit of context of where the disciples and Jesus were right before this. So right before this story that takes place, basically Jesus just found out that John the Baptist, his cousin and close friend, had just been beheaded by Herod, right? And so Jesus wants to go away and grieve. And I totally get that on a totally human level. Like, any time for those of you who have lost somebody close to you, you need to take time to grieve, right? You need to take time to process that. And so totally understand where Jesus is going, and that the disciples are even like, hey, like, we know a place that's quiet, that's off where nobody else is. Let's go there and let's just pray and let's grieve and let's just, like, be together and, like, process this death. And so Jesus is in this place of his own poverty, of experiencing the grief and the loss of one of his best friends, John the Baptist. So they head off, and they hop in their boats, and they head to the other side of Galilee on one of the shores, and it's this deserted place, as we just heard in the gospel. It's this deserted place, and they head up there, and everybody shows up. And not just like a small group of people that are like, oh, hey, Jesus, I saw you over there, you know, I figured I'd come and say hi. 5,000 people, right? So all of a sudden, where Jesus is wanting to grieve is in his own poverty of, like, the pain that he's experiencing, all of a sudden this massive crowd shows up, and they're hungry, and they're tired, and they're in need of healing, and they're in need of encouragement. And Jesus has no other choice but to give of himself. Like, Jesus doesn't do anything else according to who he is other than give of himself in love and to preach to these people and to heal them and to draw them into an encounter with his generous heart. That's the generosity of Jesus. So the disciples are watching all of this take place. They're seeing, you know, their close friend Jesus probably wanting to grieve. He's probably exhausted, and yet he's giving of himself to these people, so much so that it starts to become the evening. And so they recognize, they say, hey, Jesus, like, it's late, basically, it's late. Like, let's dismiss these people, dismiss this crowd, so that they can go to the surrounding villages and farms and find lodging and provisions, because we don't have enough food to feed them. They're going to be hungry, and we're a long ways from any sort of civilization. Let's stop there for a second. Up until this point in Luke, and really if you look through all the Gospels, I mean, even through Jesus' death, the whole lives of the disciples are basically these selfish pursuits, right? Like, think of the time that, like, Jesus proclaims that he's gonna basically go and suffer his death on the cross. And then they take off. And what do? Basically, the very next line is that they're arguing about who's better than the other. So you got, you know, Peter and James and John would be like, I'm way better. I'm way closer to Jesus than you are. Like, I'm, you know, look at how awesome I am. You know, basically, it's total selfishness. It's total egoism. And this happens over and over and over through the gospel to where they're just focused on their own needs. Basically, Lord, what's in it for me? And so in their selfishness, they're held back from encountering the generosity of Jesus. And the beautiful thing here is that, I mean, we can first look at this line and be like, who are these guys to tell Jesus what to do? Hey, dismiss these people so that they can go and like take care of themselves. And I'm wondering if Jesus led them to this point so that it pulls them out of themselves and cues them in to focus on another's needs, right? Who in here loves hospitality, loves to just like host people, and I know Sharon does, loves to like host people, have people over, and just like take care of them, right? Praise God for you. This was not the disciples. So Jesus is taking, he's teaching them a lesson here of like, hey, what if you focus on somebody other than yourselves and be generous to them? And so Jesus then replies with, give them some food yourselves. And I love this line too, because he's saying like, he's like, hey, great, perfect. You noticed that they have a need. Now go do something about it, right? So it's not just like, hey, Jesus, you should take care of this thing. It's like, no. What if you guys love on them? What if you guys be generous to them? What if you guys come out of yourselves, be pulled out of yourselves and stretched out of your selfishness and focus on them and actually do something about it? And so they reply almost kind of facetiously. Like we can, I don't know if I'm reading into this a little bit too much, but they said, you know, they replied, 5 loaves and 2 fish are all we have. Like, unless we ourselves go and buy more food, like basically we can't take care of them with what we have. And the beauty is Jesus is drawing them into their poverty. So he doesn't just completely shut them down and I don't know, basically bring them up into an encounter with their own poverty, with their own limitations, and then be like, okay, well, I mean, yeah, that's a good point. You know, you guys don't have what it takes, right? No, he's saying he's helping them encounter their own limitations, encounter their own incapacity to take care of this thing that Jesus is inviting them to, and helping them recognize in themselves that it's like, I don't have what it takes. And so then Jesus replies to that. There's also that, you know, it gives us the detail that there's 5,000 people to like really accentuate the fact that this is a massive group that they're dealing with. They have 5 loaves and 2 fish, right? 5 loaves and 2 fish, think of it for a second. This would be about enough to feed 12 guys, the 12 disciples, right? And so they're recognizing their poverty. And so then Jesus doesn't give them the immediate answer, but he says, have them sit down in groups of about 50. So they're taking a risk now. Jesus has just invited them to come out of themselves, to come out of their own selfishness, to be generous, and then to do something about it, but they don't know how this is all going to play out. So they're taking a step of faith in responding to where Jesus is inviting them, and they're responding to this invitation. Now, they could have just given over, you know, the 5 loaves and 2 fish and be like, well, looks like we're going to go hungry because Jesus is probably just going to give it away and like teach us a lesson about, being hungry and sacrificing and fasting and whatever. So they're taking a risk and basically like not being fed themselves. But the beauty is, even in this poverty, even in this stretching, they respond to what he's inviting them to have them go and sit down in groups of 50. So they did so, and they had them all sit down. So then Jesus takes the little that they have. He takes the 5 loaves and the 2 fish, and looking up to heaven, he said the blessing, broke the bread, broke them, and gave them to the disciples to set before the crowd. Does that sound familiar? Taken, blessed, broken, and then shared. This is what happens at every Mass. Jesus takes the little that we have. I mean, like, let's recognize these little wafers of bread and, you know, the fairly cheap sacramental wine is kind of like nothing, right? And Jesus takes that and he makes it super abundant. But let's pause here for a second and see what happens in that he gave it to the disciples to set before the men. So the disciples here are invited to participate in generosity with Jesus' generosity, right? Jesus didn't just like be like, hey, watch this, and then go and take all of this bread and fish and then go and distribute it themselves. He's inviting them to participate in his generosity to the point where he steps back and he doesn't do anything other than take it, bless it, break it, and then give it to them to then go out and be generous in giving it to all of the 5,000 people. This is a pretty profound detail. It's one thing to pray for, you know, I don't know, really pray for any intention, like pray that somebody is healed, pray that, you know, pray for the poor, pray for the archbishop, pray for whatever sort of thing that the Lord puts on your heart, please do that. Don't think for a second that I'm saying that that's a bad thing. It's a whole other thing to actually ask the Lord, okay, what do you want me to do about this, right? It's very easy to offer up an intention and to pray for something and say, Lord, you take care of it. And we do need to do that sometimes, absolutely. We absolutely need to surrender to the Lord. But sometimes within that, there's a selfishness to where we block off what the Lord wants to do with us through that intention. So it's like, all right, Lord, I'm going to give this to you, and then I'm going to step back and be like, don't ask anything of me to be able to like fulfill that prayer intention through me, through your generosity to me and through me. So this is what Jesus is inviting us to. When we give Jesus our poverty, when we give him our fears, our desires, the problems that we're experiencing in our life, our own limitations, our addictions, the you know problems that we're facing at work, even like our time, when we give him everything, he takes the little that we have, and he makes it super abundant. To the point where there's 12 wicker baskets full left over, so they end up with way more than what they came with. They came with 5 loaves and 2 fish that wouldn't have filled 12 wicker baskets. Jesus makes it super abundant. I think one of the, I don't know, the perennial struggles of just humanity is that we try to rely on ourselves to fulfill our own needs, to solve our own problems, to basically like live life according to what I can do for myself and even just like the little bit that I can take care of other people's needs of those around me. And the Lord wants to make that super abundant. He wants to amplify it. He wants to draw us into a generosity to where miracles happen. And sometimes we keep him from performing those miracles in our lives because of our own selfishness. I know I have. In the compartmentalization of our lives, in the selfishness of my time, I know that there's times where, and I totally regret this, where there's times where it's like, Lord, I know that you're inviting me to this thing, and I'm just saying no because I don't want to. I'm saying no because it's uncomfortable, it's hard, I'm tired, whatever it is, and so I'm just saying no, and I'm gonna go do my own thing. And what if that was the Lord saying like, hey, I wanna perform this miracle through you. You have nothing to give, perfect. Let me give through you. So maybe a prayer that we can pray, something that we can ask of the Lord in this time here today before we come to the Eucharist. It's like, Lord, where am I being selfish in my life? Where do you want to be generous through me? Where do you want to take my poverty, the little bit that I have, and make it super abundant so that it not only blesses me, but then it blesses other people? We're about to receive, like I said, some really cheap little wafers and cheap sacramental wine. We're about ready to make that into Jesus, into God. This thing that should never happen. We're about ready to make that into Christ's very body and blood, soul and divinity, so that we can receive his super abundant life in us. This is the generosity of the Lord. This is where the Lord says, hey, let me into your poverty. Let me into the little that you have and make it explode. Make it super abundant. So let's allow the Lord to illuminate an area of our lives that we can unite with the Eucharist to offer him our poverty so that he can make it super abundant and so that we can then be generous with everybody around us.